This morning is the United States against Schuber. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, judges of this honorable court, may it please the court. Article 10 requires due diligence. This case is about government indifference. There were 138 days between the appellant entering pretrial confinement and commencement of trial. Of those 138 days, the trial judge found 111 were without explanation. Because the first step in Article 10 review is the trigger, my intent is to focus first on a specified issue and whether all pretrial restraint counts for Article 10 purposes. Time permitting, I then shift to the Barker analysis, and my intent is to specifically focus on the second prong, reasons for delay.
Counsel, how is restriction to the limits of a CONUS base where one can get drunk at the club, work out at the gym, sleep in a comfortable room, go to church, shop at the BX, shop at the commissary, and in general partake of all the joys of suburban living in the Air Force? In any
sounds like an Air Force base to me.
It's an Air Force case. I say nothing about other services. How is that in any way arrest within the meaning of Article 10?
Because Congress defined it that way, Your Honor. We can choose whether, you know, Congress should have engaged in different ways.
And how did Congress define it that way?
In Article 9, which is consistent with the legislative history, where they used to employ open arrest, which was again to the limits of the base regularly, as opposed to barracks or quarters. And we have case law where, in fact, this court, the Court of Military Appeals anyway, applied it to restriction to base without any consideration to whether it was tantamount to confinement. In fact, Article 9 or 10, neither one makes any reference to Article 13, to conditions tantamount to confinement or unnecessarily punitive or unnecessarily rigorous. That's a separate distinction. Interestingly enough, Congress used the word restriction only twice in the UCMJ, and that was as punishment for Article 15s or as punishment for summary court-martial. The distinction between various forms of restraint is really a presidential distinction which came through the RCMs, and which this court has said, in the area of substitutional speedy trial, Article 10 reigns supreme over 707.
Well, in fact, isn't this a hangover from the 19th century, when arrest really meant something, when you got stuck in your tent?
Yes.
Or you got stuck to the company area?
Yes.
Right, as opposed to confinement. We all, I presume, think we know what confinement is.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
There's no dispute.
And we can't take account of, shall we say, changing conditions, say, at least with respect to, you know, I'm not talking about a bear base over in Iraq. I'm talking about an Air Force base in CONUS with all the creature comforts it affords. That's still arrest?
It is, because Congress initially had required arrest and confinement.
Well, counsel, Article 9 can say whatever it says, and it does say what it says, but this court hasn't interpreted Article 9 to mean that every restriction is arrest. So, I mean, Article 9 can talk about arrest, but that doesn't make this an arrest.
That's correct, Your
Honor. I mean, under this court's case law, explain how what the accused in this case faced with was an arrest.
There's two forms.
Can you answer that question? But just make sure you answer the following while you're doing it. Was he or was he not performing military duties, and where is that reflected in the record?
I can answer that question simply, Your Honor. It's not in the record. There's no indication whether he was performing which duties and which duties he was performing before. It's simply not there.
Thank you. Sorry.
This court has distinguished between restrictions, and I was put forth to the court that the distinctions is when a restriction does not apply is when it's an administrative restriction or, as the President has listed out, the conditions on liberty. This sort of overlaps with credit because there are circumstances like Walls where effectively the court has said he was free to leave, or Burrell where the court
finally
restricted.
Well, in this case, he went home on leave.
We can get to that, Your Honor, as to whether or not he was still on restriction. I mean, he wasn't free to go anywhere, and he did have a number of limits.
Well, I mean, he did leave the base, right?
He was allowed to leave the base to go to a specific location, to return with no deviations.
Was he accompanied by police?
Not in that circumstance, no, ma'am. He was not free to go anywhere else, though, and that's the conditions leave.
Who was supervising him?
I'm sorry?
I said, who was supervising while he left the base? Himself, right?
That appears to be the case, yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor. Although, if he had gone somewhere other than Clear Lake, he would have been breaking restriction because he was subject to restriction even while he was on PASTA.
How long should your analysis case take to proceed to trial?
I don't know how long one should take, but we know that in this case, 111 days was not.
How do we know that's not a reasonable amount of time? If you can't tell us what's a reasonable amount of time, you just know when it's not, and that's your case. But
yes, Your Honor, because there's issues of cooperation and what other evidence they were going to have. In this particular case, the bulk of the delay.
Give us a sense of scale.
For a simple year analysis.
I mean, I'm just a knucklehead, right? So I don't know. This is maybe 138 days, maybe ideal. That's great. Wow, that's lightning speed. Tell me why that isn't true.
Given six-year analysis, they had all these results before he entered pretrial confinement. They had four results before he entered pretrial confinement. There's really no reason this couldn't have gone to trial within just a couple of months. It's the judge even questioned, and the Article 32 officer suggested this should have been a special, both because of facts and given the circumstances. There was really no reason for it to be a general.
Now, a couple of months suggests that your case then depends on the outcome to the question about whether restriction was arrest for the purposes of Article 10.
It doesn't depend on it, but it substantially weakens.
Because otherwise, you're at a much shorter period of time.
Yes, Your Honor.
And coming pretty close to your couple of months non-standard.
Yes, Your Honor. If it was just the 71 days, all we have to argue is that the 44 of those days, the government didn't explain anything.
Are you understanding that this would be arguing in the alternative? If we were just talking about 71 days, would that be a violation of Article 10 in this case?
As I just mentioned, Your Honor, it would be certainly problematic because there's no case I can point to where this court has ever found 71 days to be a violation of Article 10. However, we would still point to 44 of those days are unexplained, recognizing we have nothing to point to. But I do want to go back to Article 10 itself. We're not just focusing on the restriction because the language says that the termination of Article 10 is trial or dismissal and release.
But it's if they're in arrest or confinement. I mean, that's the trigger for the whole thing, isn't it?
That's the trigger initially, but it appears that the language itself only terminates the...
Oh, you mean if he's sitting in Hollywood and he hasn't been tried yet, then Article 10 is still triggered?
If he was in confinement and while before
No, 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 no. If he started out in arrest or confinement, yes, conceitedly, and then they said, oh, just go take a break and sit on the beach in Hawaii, it still runs?
If when he was released, there were charges pending. If there were no charges pending, then it doesn't apply because he has now met the conditions of Article 10 where he's been
No,
released.
What you're saying is that once 10 is triggered, subsequent status matters not at all.
Presuming the charges have been...
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Subsequent status matters not. Is there any case law to support that assertion?
The application of this court. The court has not specifically said that, but Powell was 110 days out of 161. Williams is another case where he was on and off again. We have a couple of cases. Whitaker was one where I believe the Army...
Are those cases where they were returned to confinement?
No, they were not. They were released before trial completely, yet the court applied Article 10. And I should note that this is just the trigger. This isn't the Barker analysis. Whether or not it's triggered does not yet get you to an Article 10 violation. If the entire period counts, that still doesn't resolve whether or not he's met the Barker factors and weighing each of them. A number of these cases existed pre-Barker, where, like Rawls, where the court is confusing in some respects the idea of prejudice because Burton had established a presumption of prejudice. And so when Judge Cook was writing Rawls, he in fact referenced that without more prejudice, he was not ready to adopt the Burton presumption. Barker is taking care of that by saying, prejudice is a separate issue. It's a separate one of four issues to be evaluated once you meet the initial threshold question. And so the issue whether restriction applies under Article 10 is simply the trigger to get you to the analysis. The lack of restriction may in fact be a valuable consideration in the Barker analysis as to why there really is no prejudice. It may elevate the prejudice prong in the Barker analysis to say, yes, you met the threshold, but geez, you were out of confinement for so long, you really haven't shown any prejudice sufficient to demonstrate a violation. Again, Barker's made negative 104 parts.
So this would still be a 138-day case if, after attending the funeral, he had stayed home.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think the lack of restriction, it can be considered in some things. For example, where the government is dealing with multiple people in confinement and chooses to prioritize cases based on...
Just answer my question.
Yes, Your Honor.
If they said, go to this funeral and then just lounge around at home until the trial starts, it would still be a 138-day case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And I will note that the second period of restriction, he did not get to attend another funeral that occurred during that time period.
No. My premise is, they said, you're off anything. Just show up at trial. It's still a 138-day case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And that would be consistent with the open arrest that used to be applied and with the Articles of War said, restriction to tents, barracks, or whatever limits the commander...
Well, but here in my premise, there's no restriction whatsoever. Presumably, he could go to Cucamonga if he showed up at trial in time.
And where it's simply like Walls or Burrell, where the court said the restriction was he could go anywhere with an escort, then I would agree that it would not be a restriction. Or were it administrative restriction unrelated to the allegations of trial, we would agree that
you're trying to draw a more elegant distinction than I am. Thank you.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but that would be consistent with the President's limits in 304, where it no longer considers condition on liberties applying to 707 as well as administrative restriction is exempted. So the arguments we make are consistent with the President's application on the 707, understanding 707 is different.
Counsel, could you then play out for us the relationship among the statutory standard, the amount of time that would be given, and the Barker factors in terms of, take Judge Stuckey's example, where someone has just been a very brief period of time in arrest and the balance of time before trial is not in arrest. How then does that play out in terms of considering the Barker factors and any particular remedy?
It would have to be a period of time that overlaps with charging. And so, assuming it's at the beginning of the period of investigation, early on, but close enough to the investigation being completed that they actually have enough to charge, it's not going to affect a lot because they still have the 120 time period from the President. That was one of the reasons this court overruled Burton, was the President has now given some guidelines that's helping make these trials move faster. So if we had 2 weeks of arrest during which he was charged but then released, you would have Article 10 applying because we don't have dismissal and release from charges. And I note that this court used that same sort of statutory language in looking at Cooper and saying that trial means trial. Article 10 would still apply to get you to the Barker analysis, but I would think the Barker analysis is going to weigh heavily against because the idea here is still being held for trial, but... I guess the way I would look at it, an argument on prejudice, I said that even if there was no Barker prejudice, he was still in restraint, and so that it necessarily favors the defense, even if it doesn't weigh heavily. If he was under no restraint whatsoever, I would argue the prejudice would actually favor the government because he wasn't under any restraint, and that would be a significant factor in the Barker analysis. And again, with reference to the restriction counting, I note that the restriction is a condition specifically discussed by the President, and part of that is because now under 134 we have breaking restriction versus breaking arrest. And so it's an understanding that there are certain conditions which trigger the 134 punishment as opposed to 95. Unless there are any questions on that, I'll turn to the Barker analysis in this case.
One question about sequence here.
Yes, Your Honor.
The appellant was, I believe, arraigned on the 2nd of June.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and I realize 10 says tried, not arraigned, but anyway. Didn't the judge at the arraignment advise the appellant that any motions to dismiss or for any other relief should be made then?
He permitted deferral of that because it was the arraignment was... advance for purposes of meeting this to 7:07 clock.
Did the appellant move to dismiss on Article 10 grounds then?
They indicated to the judge they had those motions, but asked to defer until we get closer to trial.
Well, doesn't that at least raise the inference that maybe they weren't ready to go to trial?
And no, Your Honor, they were ready. In fact, there was no time period excluded for the defense purposes. There was some discussion on the record.
Did they get any extension? Did defense request or granted any extension?
No, Your Honor, they were not. There was not a single period of time attributed to the defense.
Well, no, but did they request any extensions?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge. Okay. So you're saying they were ready to go to trial at arraignment?
There are no
at
facts.
The time of arraignment.
There are no facts contrary to that or that would indicate the judge's
decision. Well, except that they were asked to move or to submit any motions, and they didn't.
They indicated to the judge they were going to, but no, they did not.
But saying they were going to doesn't say they're ready for trial, does it?
Perhaps if the judge had asked for them rather than allowed deferment, we'd be able to answer that, Your Honor. But because he permitted the deferment, I can also speculate.
Okay, thank you.
With respect to the Barker analysis and the second prong, the reasons for the delay, there are 48 days the judge found, but there was no articulated reasons. The government has no evidence to justify any diligence during those time periods at all. They called the Chief of Justice, who came in after the fact. He was asked both by the defense counsel and by the judge, what did the government do during this time period? I don't know. What did the government do during this time period? I don't know. Even asked, what did the government do to advance the case along during the 63 days waiting for the expert to try to move it earlier? Nothing. So for those time periods, there's certainly nothing for the government to be able to argue due diligence. The biggest time period, though, however, is the last period where they're waiting for one expert from Brooks Lab to the exclusion of all others. The point I hear, the judge went through with Dr. Turner and emphasized there were several other experts who were available who have testified, who are familiar with Brooks, but yet none of them were ever even inquired into.
Were they from the lab or were they outside experts?
There were several from the lab, which Dr. Turner said they only go out in cases time permitting.
Well, was there any evidence of record that someone else from the lab was available prior to the guy who testified?
Dr. Turner himself was available and had previously, based on cancellations, gone to the same base before on short notice to do a trial.
Well, but that's not really my question. Is there any evidence of record that that he would have showed up earlier if asked?
So much time. You can answer the question.
There's no evidence one way or the other, Your Honor.
Thank you.
We have a further opportunity on the vote.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, I am Major Naomi Porterfield, and I, along with Colonel Don Christensen, represent the United States in this matter. Subject to the court's questions, I'd like to focus my argument today on the specified issue. Both the Air Force Court and the military judge improperly applied Article 10 to the entire 138-day period preceding appellant's trial. As a starting point, I would note that throughout appellant's brief, he focuses on the purpose of speedy trial generally, as opposed to the purpose of speedy trial with respect to Article 10 in particular. Now, Article 10 was designed to protect an accused in the military justice system because they did not have the right, the constitutional right, to post bail. And this was a point noted by the military judge in this case. Article 10 applies, of course, to the 71-day period appellant spent in pretrial confinement, but no more. As a starting point, I'd like to turn the court's attention to appellant's argument that his restriction to base constituted an arrest. This court has never applied that proposition, notwithstanding the language in Article 9, which I would note is not unambiguous in that it fails to specify exactly what specified limits means. Specified limits could mean a variety of different things. And without more, it's important to look to even the legislative history that appellant references and to this court's interpretation. This court expressly rejected the notion that restriction to base alone was sufficient to constitute an arrest, and that was in Rawls. That notion was specifically rejected. In essence,
but to be clear, some forms of restriction could be arrests, in your view.
Certainly, Your Honor, and even the cases that appellant has cited, those forms of restriction were limited to more narrower limits than is present in this case. But here, what we have is restriction to base, not just any base, but an Air Force base, as Judge Stickey points out. And there is no evidence that appellant was in any way otherwise restricted and not performing.
Well, how do you answer the appellant's argument that it doesn't matter, that once it's triggered by pretrial confinement, total absence wouldn't make any difference because the clock continues to run, that this is a 138-day case regardless of the conditions under which post-pretrial confinement, under which he was acted post-pretrial confinement?
Well, we think that's wrong. Our interpretation, Your Honor, is that, of course, it matters. This Court has said it matters. In Nelson, this Court specifically pointed out that while Article 10 does serve as a trigger, there is some minimal amount of time required to constitute a legitimate claim of harm. In Casio, this Court said that the length of the delay serves as a triggering mechanism to apply the analysis of Article 10. While, of course, the language of Article 10 says, yes, it applies to arrest or confinement, there is a point at which, based on Casio, based on Nelson, the rest of the factors in Barker are put into play and the analysis is required. It's not in every case.
Well, yeah, would you say that there are cases in which pretrial, although the accused was held in pretrial confinement, the time in which the duration was not enough to trigger 10 at all, and therefore we don't need to go to Barker?
Nelson, Your Honor, yep. And Nelson, that was 13 days of confinement. Okay. He was released, as Your Honor said. I mean, the evidence doesn't indicate he was on the beach, but he was nonetheless released without any sort of additional restraint. And this Court said it was not sufficient to trigger the Barker analysis. While the same circumstances weren't true in Casio, the Court still reiterated the point that a triggering mechanism was required to implicate the analysis of Article of Barker, and that it wasn't necessarily applicable in every case where there was confinement. But in any event, here, the confinement period is limited to 71 days. Appellant was not under arrest. He was granted access to the entire base, and the legislative history makes that clear. The president's explanations in the manual also corroborates the notion that specified limits with respect to arrest require something more than restriction to base, that it requires a narrower limit and it requires the accused being prevented from performing his full military duties. Of course, the record is unclear, but the record does not indicate that he was prohibited from doing so in this case. Next.
Well, whose responsibility is it to establish that record?
Well, for purposes of Article 10, in establishing reasonable diligence, the government, of course, puts forth the information on the record. However, the United States would note that this issue, in terms of distinguishing the 71-day period from the remainder of time, was not debated below. So there was not a point at which whether he was performing his military duties became a factor in the court's analysis. The notion that once triggered, only trial.
So, but how does that cut in terms of whether we should view availability for military service and performance of military duties one way or another?
Well, Your Honor, I suppose as a starting point, I would note that I don't think that's dispositive in this case.
Understand, but just in terms of a factor.
Certainly. But in the absence of any evidence that he was, I think based on a reading of the record, although it's not specifically stated in the record that he was prevented from performing his military duties, the absence of the fact that he was, I think, would have come up in the context of prejudice had that been the case.
But if it's the government's responsibility to establish all the conditions and they haven't established that he's performing military duties, why shouldn't we view the record as one in which he wasn't performing military duties?
Only because, Your Honor, I believe that this court can look at the entire record and presume presume that the opposite is true. Presume that the opposite is true because, in terms of prejudice, it certainly would have been asserted by the appellant had he been prevented.
So, I understand. So even though it's the government's responsibility to establish the facts, if the defense doesn't establish a fact, then that might have been helpful in prejudice, then we'll presume the fact in favor of the government.
Well, no, Your Honor, it's the government's responsibility to establish reasonable diligence, okay, which they did in this case. With respect to asserting the need for a speedy trial, the speedy trial demand, that burden is on the appellant.
It sounds like another Air Force rule thing where the Air Force people want to go to work. This isn't part of the record, but, you know, there's plenty of people, perhaps there's only people in my platoon who are more than happy not to go to work if work meant going to the field for the week. So they would hardly argue that they were prejudiced by not going to the field during the week.
Well, are you really
arguing that in the absence of anything in the record reflecting whether or not he was performing his military duties, the absence of him complaining about that indicates that he was?
Well, Your Honor, at the outset, we're arguing that that particular fact is not dispositive in this case.
Well, counsel, let me ask you a slightly different question. Are you aware of any instance where someone in today's Air Force even is placed on restriction and prohibited from going to work?
No, Your Honor.
I mean,
I am not aware.
I mean, maybe the Air Force is different than the Marine Corps, but isn't there just a presumption of regularity that people go to work unless they're told they can't?
Yes, Your Honor, and what I would point to more specifically in response to both your question and the question of Chief Judge Alfaron and Judge Baker is that the restriction did not preclude him. It was very specific in what he was required to do when he was placed on restriction, and it did not order him to not go to work.
Following up on Judge Baker, I mean, what is more onerous, going to work on the comfortable confines of an Air Force base or loafing and getting paid for it on the comfortable confines of an Air Force base? And maybe that just goes to prejudice.
Perhaps. But, Your Honor, there's no evidence in the restriction order, there's no evidence in the record that appellant was placed in any type of restriction that would constitute an arrest under Article 9 or Article 10.
Okay, let's talk about diligence here. Who's minding the store? The Chief of Justice comes up and they say, well, okay, leaving aside getting the expert, we still have 48 days here. And what did you do? Well, I don't know. Is that due diligence?
Well,
I mean, and he's the Chief of Justice. He ought to know. And that's when this guy was in confinement, was it not?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Who's minding the store here?
There's of course some evidence in the record that the chief of justice was perhaps unaware of some of the things that were taking place.
Well, isn't it his job to be aware?
Yes, Your Honor. However, I think it's important not to set aside the fact that they were waiting on an expert. Especially given the nature of the
wait, were they waiting or did that come later?
Yeah, is there any overlap between the 48 and the 63?
I apologize. Is there overlap between the 48 and
the 48 days, the 48 allegedly unexplained days and the 63 days, which were explained by the need to get the expert?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I apologize.
Well, it is asserted that the Chief of Justice was totally unable to come up with any explanation for 48 days. And it is also asserted that the government asserted that 63 days were attributable to the need to get the expert.
Yes,
Your Honor. Now, are those two entirely distinct periods?
They are distinct, Your Honor.
Okay, that's all I'm asking.
How long should it generally take to do a naked urinalysis case?
Your Honor, I think that depends on the facts and circumstances of each particular case.
Right, but give me a sense. The appellant had the same problem with this excellent question. But just give me a baseline without, and I'm not saying for the purposes of Article 10, I'm saying just for, if you are teaching a class to a bunch of new trial counsel and you're saying, okay, today's class is on doing a urinalysis case, what would you tell them as to how long it should take?
Your Honor, again, reiterating
and then we'll
that.
Stipulate no motions, no nothings.
No motions, no nothings. No issues with defense counsel.
Not a plea, not a plea. It's going to be contested, but it's not a. But there's no search and seizure issues. It's just here's the test.
Depending on the availability of the witnesses, the expert witnesses, the availability of counsel, taking into account as the court has in the past. The fact that various parties have to come from different bases, I think it's reasonable, granted that burden has changed, but I think it's reasonable to assert that a period of 90 days is a reasonable period to accomplish a relatively simple case, that a period of 90 days without respect to more extreme issues is reasonable to accomplish this case. For the council to get up to speed and whatnot. If there are no further questions with respect to the reasonable diligence, I would just reiterate the point with respect to the specified issue that the notion of Article 10 once triggered not being inapplicable absent release and dismissal is incorrect. It's never been upheld by this court. In fact, nothing that this court has ever held is consistent with that notion. Both the plain language of the statute, its legislative history, the Sixth Amendment, the other manual provisions are all consistent, and particularly the case law, consistent with the proposition that restriction and arrest are not the same. That while some restrictions can be tantamount to arrest, that was not the case here. And if there are no further questions, for these reasons and those outlined in our brief, the United States respectfully requests that the court correct the lower court's application of Article 10 to the period beyond the 71-day period that appellant's been in pretrial confinement and remand this case to the military judge for further proceedings.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, sir. I just want to make 3 points. First, in response to Judge Ryan, in the Air Force, the common practice on when somebody's restricted pending trial is for base beautification, weeds and seeds duty. It's rare for somebody to be performing regular duties in advance of trial.
Is that in the record?
No, ma'am, but in response to your question.
Is it in a restriction order?
It is not. Those are absence in the record, but it was in response to what the common practice is. I also wanted to touch base with Nelson briefly. I think the government misspoke when they said the 13 days were not sufficient to trigger Barker. The Barker did not come into play as being applicable until much, much later than Nelson. And where Nelson is consistent with the appellant's position is he was only in confinement for 13 days immediately after the offense. Trial did not occur for 6.5 months later. The day of the charge is not specifically there, but unless he was charged immediately after the offense, he would have been released and without charges before Article 10 applied. And then lastly, I just wanted to make sure we emphasize the appellant demanded speedy trial 6 times, and the expert in this case that they waited for 63 days did not perform any of the 6-year analysis tests. Unless there are other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess pending further order of the court.
Court stands adjourned until further notice.